Andrew Carnegie, article from Wikipedia, La Free Encyclopedia. Andrew Carnegie, November 25, 1835 to August 11, 1919, was a Scottish-born industrialist, businessman, and a major philanthropist. He was an immigrant as a child with his parents. He built Pittsburgh's Carnegie Steel Company, which was later merged with Elbert H. Gerry's Federal Steel Company and several smaller companies to create U.S. Steel. With the fortune he made from business, he turned to philanthropy and interests in education, founding the Carnegie Corporation of New York, Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. While Carnegie paid his employees the low wages typical of the time, he later gave away most of his money to fund the establishment of many library schools and universities in America, the United Kingdom, and other countries, as well as a pension fund for former employees. He's often regarded as the second richest man in history. Carnegie started as a telegrapher, and by the 1860s had investments in railroads, railroad sleeping cars, bridges, and oil derricks. He built further wealth as a bond salesman, raising money for American enterprise in Europe. Steel was where he made his fortune. In the 1870s, he founded the Carnegie Steel Company, a step which cemented his name as one of the captains of industry. By the 1890s, the company was the largest and most profitable industrial enterprise in the world. Carnegie sold it to J.P. Morgan in 1901, who created U.S. Steel. Carnegie devoted the remainder of his life to large-scale philanthropy, with special emphasis on local libraries, world peace, and education and scientific research. Early life. The son of a weaver, Carnegie immigrated as a child with his family from Dunfermline in Scotland to the United States in 1848 and settled in Allegheny, Pennsylvania. His first job at age 13 in 1848 was as a bobbin boy, changing spools of thread in a cotton mill 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. His wages were $1.25 a week, plus another 80 cents for firing the furnace. In 1851, Carnegie became a telegraph messenger boy in the Pittsburgh office of the Ohio Telegraph Company at $2.20 per week. Carnegie became a devoted follower of Robert Burns. His uncle, George Lauder, a proprietor of a grocer shop in Dunfermline High School, introduced young Carnegie to the writings of Robert Burns and such historical Scottish heroes as Robert the Bruce, William Wallace, and Rob Roy. It was perhaps Burns who most influenced Carnegie. He regarded Burns as one of the greatest preachers of democracy. Lauder had Carnegie memorize many pages of Burns's writings, writings that were important to him for the rest of his life. When he donated money for Carnegie libraries worldwide, it was with the proviso that the libraries stock the complete works of Burns and commission a bust of the poet for public display. His new job as a messenger frequently required him to deliver messages to a theater, and Carnegie often managed to arrive just as the curtain was going up, using a charm that was to pay even greater dividends in the future. The boy was usually able to convince the theater's manager to allow him to stay and watch the performance for free. In addition to increasing his income, the job provided Carnegie with a lifelong love of William Shakespeare's works. Formal education. Carnegie's education and passion for reading was given a boost by Colonel James Anderson, who opened his personal library of 400 volumes to working boys each Saturday night. Carnegie was a consistent borrower and a self-made man in both his economic development and his intellectual and cultural development. His capacity and willingness for hard work, his perseverance, and his alertness soon brought forth opportunities. Carnegie quickly taught himself to distinguish the differing sounds the incoming signals produced and learned to transcribe signals by ear without having to write them down. Starting in 1853, Thomas A. Scott of the Pennsylvania Railroad Company employed Carnegie as a secretary telegraph operator at a salary of $4 per week. At age 18, the youth began a rapid advancement through the company, becoming the superintendent of the Pittsburgh division. Scott also helped him with his first investments. In 1855, Carnegie invested $500 in a successful firm called Adams Express. Later, he invested money in sleeping cars for the Pennsylvania Railroad railroad company and bought part of the company making the wagons. This turned out to be a very profitable investment. Reinvesting his money in railroad-related industries, iron bridges and rails, Carnegie slowly accumulated capital, the basis for his later success. 1860-1865, Civil War. Before the Civil War, Carnegie had formed a partnership with George M. Pullman, an inventor of a sleeping car for first-class travel. The sleeping car facilitated business travel at distances over 500 miles. The investment proved a great success and a source of profit for Woodruff and Carnegie. The young Carnegie became the superintendent of the Pittsburgh Railroad's Western Division and introduced several improvements in the service. In spring 1861, Carnegie was appointed by Scott, who was now Assistant Secretary of War in charge of military transportation, as superintendent of the military railways and the Union government's telegraph lines in the East. Carnegie helped open the rail lines into Washington that the rebels had cut. He rode the locomotive pulling the 1st Brigade of Union troops to reach Washington. Following the defeat of Union forces at Bull Run, he personally supervised the transportation of the defeated forces. Under his organization, the telegraph service rendered efficient service to the Union cause and significantly assisted in the eventual victory. Carnegie later boasted that he was the first casualty of the war when he gained a scar on his cheek from working with telegraph wire. Defeat of the Confederacy required vast supplies of munitions, as well as railroads and telegraph lines, to deliver the goods. The war demonstrated how integral the industries were to American success. In 1864, Carnegie invested $40,000 in Story Farm on Oil Creek in Venango County, Pennsylvania. In 1 year, the farm yielded over $1 million in cash dividends and petroleum from oil wells on the property sold profitably. The demand for iron products, such as armor for gunboats, cannon, and shells, as well as 100 other industrial products, made Pittsburgh a center of wartime production. Carnegie worked with others in establishing a steel rolling mill and steel production, and control of industry became the source of his fortune. Carnegie had some investments in the iron industry before the war. After the war, Carnegie left the railroads to devote all of his energies to the ironworks trade. Carnegie worked to develop several ironworks, eventually forming the Keystone Bridge Works and the Union Iron Works in Pittsburgh. Although he had left the Pennsylvania Railroad Company, he did not totally sever his links with the railroads. As the Keystone Bridge Company's superintendent, Carnegie had noticed the weakness of the traditional wooden structures. These were replaced in large numbers with iron bridges made in his works. As well as having good business sense, Carnegie possessed charm and literary knowledge. He was invited to many important social functions, functions that Carnegie exploited to his own advantage. Carnegie believed in using his fortune for others and doing more than making money. He wrote, "I propose to take an income no greater than $50,000 per annum. Beyond this, I need ever earn, make no effort to increase my fortune, but spend the surplus each year for benevolent purposes. Let us cast aside business forever, except for others. Let us settle in Oxford, and I shall get a thorough education, making the acquaintance of literary men. I figure that this will take 3 years' active work. I shall pay especial attention to speaking in public. We can settle in London, and I can purchase a controlling interest in some newspaper or live review, and give the general management of it attention, taking part in public matters, especially those connected with education and improvement of the poorer classes. Man must have an idol, and the amassing of wealth is one of the worst species of idolatry. No idol is more debasing than the worship of money. Whatever I engage in, I must push inordinately. Therefore, I shall be careful to choose that life which will be the most elevating in its character. To continue much longer overwhelmed by business cares, and with most of my thoughts wholly upon the way to make more money in the shortest time, must degrade me beyond hope of permanent recovery. I will resign business at 35, but during these ensuing 2 years, I wish to spend the afternoons in receiving instruction and in reading systematically." 1880 to 1900, scholar, and activist. Carnegie continued his business career. Some of his literary intentions were fulfilled. He befriended English poet Matthew Arnold and English philosopher Herbert Spence, as well as being in correspondence and acquaintance with most U.S. presidents, statesmen, and notable writers. Carnegie greatly admired Spencer. However, Spencer's social Darwinism held philanthropy as unwise. Carnegie erected commodious swimming baths for the people of his hometown in Dunfermline, Scotland, in 1879. In the following year, Carnegie gave $40,000 for the establishment of a free library in Dunfermline. In 1884, he gave $50,000 to Bellevue Hospital Medical College, now part of New York University Medical Center, to found a histological laboratory, now called the Carnegie Laboratory. In 1881, Carnegie took his family, including his mother at age 70, on a trip to the United Kingdom. They toured Scotland by coach and enjoyed several receptions en route. The highlight for them all was a triumphal return to his native town of Dunfermline, where Carnegie's mother laid the foundation stone of a Carnegie library for which he donated the money. Carnegie's criticism of British society did not mean dislike. On the contrary, one of Carnegie's ambitions was to act as a catalyst for a close association between the English-speaking peoples. To this end, in the early 1880s, he purchased numerous newspapers in England, all of which were to advocate the abolition of the monarchy and the establishment of the British Republic. Carnegie's charm, aided by his great wealth, meant he had many British friends, including Prime Minister William Ewart Gladstone. In 1886, Andrew Carnegie's younger brother Thomas died at age 43. Success in the business continued, however. While owning steelworks, Carnegie had purchased at low cost the most valuable of the iron ore fields around Lake Superior. The same year, Carnegie became a figure of controversy. Following his tour of the UK, he wrote about his experiences in a book titled An American Foreign Hand in Britain. Although still actively involved in running his many businesses, Carnegie became a regular contributor to numerous magazines, most notably the 19th Century, under the editorship of James Knowles and the influential North American Review, led by editor Lloyd Bryce. In 1886, Carnegie wrote his most radical work to date, titled Triumphant Democracy, liberal in its use of statistics to make its arguments. The book argued his view that the American republican system of government was superior to the British monarchical system. It gave a highly favorable and idealized view of American progress and criticized the British royal family. The cover depicted an unpendant royal crown and a broken scepter. The book created considerable controversy in the UK. The book made many Americans appreciate their country's economic progress and sold over 40,000 copies, mostly in the US. In 1889, Carnegie published Wealth in the June issue of the North American Review. After reading it, Gladstone requested its publication in England, where it appeared as The Gospel of Wealth in the Pall Mall Gazette. The article was the subject of much discussion. Carnegie argued that the life of a wealthy industrialist should comprise two parts. The first part was the gathering and the accumulation of wealth. The second part was for the subsequent distribution of this wealth to benevolent causes. The philanthropy was the key to making the life worthwhile. In 1898, Carnegie tried to arrange for independence for the Philippines. As the end of the Spanish-American War neared, the United States bought the Philippines from Spain for $20 million, USD. To counter what he perceived as imperialism on the part of the United States, Carnegie personally offered $20 million, USD, to the Philippines so that the Filipino people could buy their independence from the United States. However, nothing came of this gesture, and the Philippine-American War ensued. Industrialist, 1885 to 1900, Empire of Steel. Carnegie made his fortune in the steel industry, controlling the most extensive integrated iron and steel operations ever owned by an individual in the United States. One of his two great innovations was in the cheap and efficient mass production of steel rails for railroad lines. The second was in his vertical integration of all suppliers of raw materials. In the late 1880s, Carnegie Steel was the largest manufacturer of pig iron, steel rails, and coke in the world, with a capacity to produce approximately 2,000 tons of pig metal per day. In 1888, Carnegie bought the rival Homestead Steelworks, which included an extensive plant served by tributary coal and iron fields, a 425-mile-long railway, and a line of lake steamships. Carnegie combined his assets and those of his associates in 1892 with the launching of the Carnegie Steel Company. By 1889, the U.S. output of steel exceeded that of the U.K., and Carnegie owned a large part of it. Carnegie's empire grew to include the J. Edgar Thomson Steelworks, named for J. Edgar Thomson, Carnegie's former boss and president of the Pennsylvania Railroad, Pittsburgh Bessemer Steelworks, the Lucy Furnaces, the Union Iron Mills, the Union Mill, Wilson, Walker & County, the Keystone Bridge Works, the Hartman Steelworks, the Frick Coke Company, and the Scotia Ore Mines. Carnegie, through Keystone, supplied the steel for and owned shares in the landmark Eads Bridge project across the Mississippi River at St. Louis, Missouri, completed 1874. This project was an important proof of concept for steel technology, which marked the opening of a new steel market. 1901, U.S. Steel. In 1901, Carnegie was 66 years old and considering retirement. He reformed his enterprises into conventional joint stock corporations as preparation to this end. John Pierpont Morgan was a banker and perhaps America's most important financial dealmaker. He had observed how effectively Carnegie produced profit. He envisioned an integrated steel industry that would cut costs, lower prices to consumers, and raise wages to workers. To this end, he needed to buy out Carnegie and several other major producers and integrate them into one company, thereby eliminating duplication and waste. He concluded negotiations on 2nd of March 1901 and formed the United States Steel Corporation. It was the first corporation in the world with a market capitalization in excess of $1 billion. The buyout, which was negotiated in secret by Charles M. Schwab, no relation to Charles R. Schwab, was the largest such industrial takeover in the United States history to date. The holdings were incorporated in the United States Steel Corporation, a trust organized by Morgan, and Carnegie retired from business. His steel enterprises were bought at a figure equivalent to 12 times their annual earnings, $480 million, approximately $297 billion in 2007 dollars, using the relative share of GDP, which at the time was the largest ever personal commercial transaction. Carnegie's share of this amounted to $225,639,000, which was paid to Carnegie in the form of 5%, 50-year gold bonds. The letter agreeing to sell his wealth was signed on 26 February 1901. On 2nd March, the circular formally filing the organization and capitalization at $1.4 billion, 4% of U.S. national wealth at the time, of the United States Steel Corporation actually completed the contract. The bonds were to be delivered within 2 weeks to the Hudson Trust Company of Hoboken, New Jersey, in trust to Robert A. Franks, Carnegie's business secretary. There, a special vault was built to house the physical bulk of the nearly $230 million worth of bonds. It was said that Carnegie never wanted to see or touch these bonds that represented the fruition of his business career. It was as if he feared that if he looked upon them, they might vanish, like the gossamer gold of the leprechaun. Let them lie safe in a vault in New Jersey, safe from the New York tax assessors, until he was ready to dispose of them. Retirement, 1901 to 1919, philanthropist. Carnegie spent his last years as a philanthropist. From 1901 forward, public attention was turned from the shrewd business acumen which had enabled Carnegie to accumulate such a fortune to the public-spirited way in which he devoted himself to utilizing it on philanthropic projects. He had written about his views on social subjects and the responsibilities of great wealth in Triumphant Democracy, 1886, and Gospel of Wealth, 1889. Carnegie bought Skibo Castle in Sutherland, Scotland, and made his home partly there and partly in New York. He then devoted his life to providing the capital for purposes of public interest and social and educational advancement. He was a powerful supporter of the movement for spelling reform as a means of promoting the spread of the English language. Among his many philanthropic efforts, the establishment of public libraries throughout the United States, the United Kingdom, and other English-speaking countries was especially prominent. Carnegie Libraries, as they were commonly called, were built in many places. The first was opened in 1883 in Dunfermline, Scotland. His method was to build and equip, but only on the condition that the local authority matched that by providing a site and operating maintenance. To secure local interest, in 1885, he gave $500,000 to Pittsburgh for a public library. In 1886, he gave $250,000 to Allegheny City for a music hall and library, $250,000 to Edinburgh, Scotland, for a free library. In total, Carnegie funded some 3,000 libraries located in 47 states. Carnegie also built libraries in Canada and overseas in the United Kingdom, including the Republic of Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, the West Indies, and Fiji. He also donated £50,000 to help set up the University of Birmingham in 1899. As Vance Like 1991 showed, the last years of the 19th century saw acceptance of the idea that free libraries should be available to the American public. But the design of the idealized free library was the subject of prolonged and heated debate. On one hand, the library profession called for designs that supported efficiency in administration and operation. On the other, wealthy philanthropists favored buildings that reinforced the paternalistic metaphor and enhanced civic pride. Between 1886 and 1917, Carnegie reformed both library philanthropy and library design, encouraging a closer correspondence between the two. The Broome County Public Library in New York opened in October 1904. Originally called the Binghamton Public Library, it was created with a gift of $75,000 from Andrew Carnegie. The building was designed to serve as both a public library and a community center. He gave $2 million in 1901 to start the Carnegie Institute of Technology, CIT, at Pittsburgh, and the same amount in 1902 to found the Carnegie Institution at Washington, D.C. He later contributed more to these and other schools. CIT is now a part of Carnegie Mellon University. Carnegie served on the board of Cornell University. In Scotland, he gave $2 million in 1901 to establish a trust to assist education at Scottish universities, which resulted in his being elected Lord Rector of University of St. Andrews. He also donated large sums of money to Dunfermline, the place of his birth. In addition to a library, Carnegie also bought what is known as Pentoncreef Park and opened it to all members of the public. It had previously been closed to the public. A statue of him stands there to this day. Carnegie was also a large benefactor of the Tuskegee Institute under Booker Washington for African American education. He helped Booker T. Washington create the National Negro Business League. Carnegie also established large pension funds in 1901 for his former employees at Homestead, and in 1905 for American college professors. The latter fund evolved into Teachers Insurance and Annuity Fund, College Retirement Equities Fund. One critical requirement was that church-related schools had to sever their religious connections to get his money. His interest in music led him to fund construction of 7,000 church organs. He built and owned Carnegie Hall in New York City. He also founded the Carnegie Hero Fund for the United States and Canada in 1904, a few years later, also established in the United Kingdom, Switzerland, Norway, Sweden, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Belgium, Denmark, and Germany, for the recognition of deeds of heroism. Carnegie contributed $1.5 million in 1903 for the erection of the Peace Palace at The Hague, and he donated $150,000 for a Pan American Palace in Washington as the home for the International Bureau of American Republics. Carnegie was honored for his philanthropy and support of the arts, by initiation as an honorary member of Phi Mu Alpha Sinfonia Fraternity on October 14, 1917, at the New England Conservatory of Music in Boston, Massachusetts. The fraternity's mission reflects Carnegie's values by developing young men to share their talents to create harmony in the world. By the standards of the 19th century tycoons, Carnegie was not particularly a ruthless man. But the contrast between his life and the lives of many of his own workers and of the poor in general was stark. Maybe with the giving away of his money, commented biographer Joseph Wall, he would justify what he had done to get that money.